All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We've had 7 calls, dozens of tweets, hundreds of texts tell us that the Astros are playing right now. That's not true. They first pitch at 3:05. 8-7-6-9. Astros game must be a fake. No way Castro got a hit. I know he's in the lineup today, but the hit wouldn't come until after the game
started.
Don't they
call it Buffet with the A in the afternoon after breakfast with the Astros?
Sure.
On AT&T
yeah.
Sportsnet?
That's a good thing to call it. 0694, great way to sell the no game. I can't believe people still texting, acting like y'all don't know any better. Any better about what? We told you what time first pitch was, 3:05. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. There's not a shutout going in the seventh inning stretch. All right, it's time now for In Case We Missed It.
What's in the news today?
With so many stories.
Dozens of stories.
We're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
Dozens of stories. Did you see this with Freddie Freeman? He had his reunion there to Atlanta. Still hate that about the Braves. But anyways, he had his reunion to Atlanta. They did the whole farewell. They did the video. Touching. Freeman was crying. He was very sad.
Got his ring.
Emotional. Got his ring. He fired his agent after the series. It looks like he's very, very sad that his agent overplayed his hand. Still got paid. Still with a good team. But that he's not in Atlanta. You can tell that he's heartbroken over it. Even Clayton Kershaw is like, well, I hope he's focused on the Dodgers. Like, it's caught their attention.
If you saw Kershaw's comments, too, he said, you know, hopefully at a certain point after this weekend, he'll realize we're good guys, too. And that, you know, this is a good thing we got going over here, too. And I was wondering, like, at a certain point, because it went over the entire series, not just the first game when he got his ring and everything, that the Freddie Freeman love could not stop. And you could tell every at-bat the standing ovations and how emotional he got. But on top of it, then after the series, to fire his agent, because the story came out that his agent played hardball when the Braves said they had made their last and final.
Yeah.
And that's why that the Braves decided to go in another direction, and now he fires him. If I'm a Dodger player on that team, I'm like, bro, if you didn't want to be here in the first place,
yeah,
like, what's up?
He's alienated that clubhouse, I promise you. I can't remember who it was that had us on. It might have been Coach McKell. It might have been Kevin McKell that, like, when a new player comes and they're, like, watching their games, that their new team will razz them, be like, hey, man, you're not on that team anymore. Like, this is where you're at. This is where your feet are. This is where your heart needs to be. Freddie Freeman acting like that? I'm a Dodger. I'm ticked off.
Because it's not like you're a middle-of-the-road team either. You're a World Series-caliber team that needs a guy like Freddie Freeman in that lineup that moved Max Muncy for you.
Mm-hmm.
You better start showing like your Dodger blue through and through pretty quick here.
A lot of Rocket fans wanted Kyrie Irving to opt out of the final year of his contract because they thought, oh, he opts out. Kevin Durant's going to ask for a trade. It's going to blow up for the Brooklyn Nets, which is great because the Rockets own the Nets picks. They have the rights to the Nets pick all the way until the 2027 season. In the odd years pick swap, in the even years they own their first rounder. But Kyrie Irving opting in one more year with Brooklyn, and he had the quote announcing his opt-in, normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us until tomorrow. I've made my decision to opt in. See you in the fall. A11 even.
He's an A, all right, and I think you guys all know it's followed by the word whole. The fact that this guy has never won an MVP, the fact that if you hear story after story from source after source in the know of the fact, the latest one is that Nash had a team dinner at his house where he had the MVP trophies. And Kyrie makes the off-the-cuff comment, oh, you're holding Kobe's trophies. The fact that they said that after practices that Nash would run, that Kyrie Irving would show up late to, he would start pulling guys off the floor before they went to the shower saying, now we're going to run my practice my way and keep the guys out there. Like, there has to be a come-to-Jesus moment, not only between him and the Nets, but Kevin Durant, who has said in podcasts recently, my hands are off, I'm staying away from this thing. You're signed till 2026. Your hands need to be all over this thing. And you either need to realize, hey, you believe in Kyrie so much that you need to talk to him. Because they really believe it's irreconcilable between Nash and Kyrie, which is a big problem too. So you got to figure it out. And Kyrie needs a reality check and realizes it's not your franchise. You're not running things. You're not coaching the team. Like the comment that he made when he first came in, we don't need a head coach. We got enough guys that can coach this team.
Right.
How delusional can you be when you alienated your team for half the games last year?
Still a very good player. Kyrie
Irving. He's got the best handles in the league, but between the years, I don't know what's going on.
Still a very good player. As far as the Rockets go, you probably weren't going to pick swap next year anyways, because you have the pick swap in the odd years. You have the pick in the even years. You're more than likely not going to do the pick swap in 2023, because your pick's probably going to be better than Brooklyn's pick. But I still think that there's blow-up potential in Brooklyn for the remainder of the years. We'll see. Aaron Judge, of course, had a couple of walk-offs against the Houston Astros. Thanks for pitching to him, Dusty Baker. But after the walk-off on Sunday, he said this, and did he go too far?
You mentioned the no panic. Where does that confidence, that quiet confidence come from this team?
Well, when you're the best player on the team, you know, how can you not?
Aaron, thanks for the
time. He said he's the best player on the New York Yankees. Are you okay with that?
I mean, he is, right? For this year, for sure, he is. It's just, as a teammate, you don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear him kind of putting the eye above team. You want a guy that's in it to win it with the rest of the guys in that locker room. He had every right to say it because it's true.
Uh-huh.
I just think he doesn't come across normally as that kind of brash, over-the-top, arrogant kind of guy. So it was a little different to hear it come out of his mouth.
It's usually a little subtle with him, but I do think he has tons of confidence in his ability. Rightfully so. He's one of the best players in all of baseball. And a contract year, nonetheless. I have no problem with it. I feel like a team should know the pecking order of its best players, if I'm being completely honest with you. And I have no problem when the best player says, yeah, I am the best player. I want the alpha. I want the absolute best player to say, yeah, I'm the guy. I want the bat in my hands, in that spot. Do not pitch to me. How dare you? Honestly, I like it.
I just think that I think you understand where I'm coming from. From the clubhouse's perspective, when you have those ultra egos too, like a Stanton, mm-hmm. like guys that have been there and done that before, like a Rizzo, I think there are guys that could take offense to it.
I think it depends on your relationship with them in the locker
Absolutely.
Room. And Aaron Judge, from everything we hear, is like a class dude, unless when he's talking about Altuve. But that they love him in that locker room, that they are huge fans of Aaron Judge. So I think that does come into play. But even if it doesn't, like if it's Barry Bonds and he's saying, yeah, I'm the best player on this team, and then he's sitting in his recliner and not talking to his teammates, you're still going to take Barry Bonds. You know what I mean? So I'm fine with the alpha. I want that attitude on my team. All right, the Rockets. We saw this picture. Jackson Gatlin, who covers the Rockets.
Used to be an intern here.
Yeah. Went to U of H as well. Go Cougs. Used to talk to him over there all about basketball. But he took a picture. What?
I love your passion for always including the Go Cougs part.
You always talk about Wisconsin guys when they come up.
Not really, but I
do. They never come up.
No, but I give you credit. Okay. There you go.
The Rockets adding a line behind the three-point line at the practice facility. Some people are calling it the four-point line for the Rockets. What'd you think? What'd you make of that line behind the three-point line?
Some of it are calling it the EG line because he's the guy that Gordon shoots him more than anybody, although I would say Gary Bird did his best to try and get as many as he could up there, too. I don't understand it. I guess maybe if it's for a spacing perspective, it makes some sense. I'd like to know the thoughts behind it from a Rockets perspective from someone in the organization, because otherwise, I don't get it. I don't want Gary Bird, even if he got a couple of four-point plays out of it. I don't need him or Eric Gordon. That's a bad shot.
I've seen these lines quite a bit. They go into practice gyms and things like that in the college game, and it's exactly for what you said. It's for spacing. Mm-hmm. They want their players behind that line to space the floor, and then whenever they're not on the ball, they're not involved in a pick and roll, they're not involved in an isolation, that's where they want them stand, because they do want the extra 2 feet. They want the space. They want the lanes and the pass for their ball handlers or their pick and roll, whatever the case may be. And also, like, when a pass is coming your way, you step into the shot. Like, you're not catching and shooting from behind this red four-point line. You're stepping into the pass. You're taking a step two, and you're launching the shot. Like, you're not just catching and shooting from behind the red line. That's just all about the spacing, and I like it. It shows that the Rockets with some outside-the-box thinking, although I'm not sure how outside-the-box it really is.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are looking for a story these days at this time of the year, and that they think that might be something. Look, there's enough to talk about if you're a Rockets fan.
I saw a shooting chart. You know how they do the hot charts and the shooting charts for NBA, any basketball level. But they showed how it was 10 years ago, and they showed how it is now. Like, whenever Daryl Morey, whenever he came to the Rockets, and like it was, oh, we're gonna take three shots, three-pointers, free throws, and shots inside the
layups,
paint.
Yeah.
It's the entire NBA. Like, the entire NBA shot chart is like that now. It's radical. It's
I'm going
to
give you one that from time to time isn't, and I don't think it should be. But even they pass up too many layups. That's Golden State. Golden State at least still valued the mid-range. But even them, to see in the playoffs, passing up layups to try and get the corner three is a bit frustrating to me. Look, I understand the way Daryl did the deep dive on the analytics to realize what the it's simple to say threes are more valuable than twos, but the fact that per possession, when they break it down, being in the room with those guys at some point, I get what they're trying to get across. But basketball is still basketball. You take the easiest, best shots you can get sometimes, depending on if a possession's going wrong.
It's all about the possession, right? If you shoot X amount from three-point range, X amount from two-point range, then, like, what gets you the most points? But I'm with you. Like, you find a good shot. You find a good shot. If you don't have a good shot, then maybe that's something you settle for late in the shot clock. Going to get to a couple of retreads running backs in the NFL. We're going to see again Adrian Peterson. We're going to see again Le'Veon Bell. Yeah, they're going to be carrying the rock. They're going to be rushing all around the NFL. 3, 4, 5 yards per carry. They're going to be looking for the end zone, looking for touch. Nope. They're meeting in the boxing ring. Adrian Peterson, Le'Veon Bell. They're going to do one of these made-for-TV celebrity boxing matches. So AP, Le'Veon, who you got?
I think AP, man. I mean, if you ever shaken hands with Adrian Peterson and you realize that dude is like got literally hands of stone.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a bone crushing handshake.
You call him Roberto Duran?
Yeah, I'm just saying that is a very strong man. I would take Adrian Peterson.
I'm probably leaning AP here too, but it's because he has a history of violence. And this
I knew you were going to say that. I didn't want to touch that
with
part
Peterson
of it.
And Le'Veon Bell. So give me the guy that has a history of violence for a combat sport. What do you think of these made for TV football players, basketball players, social media influencers that are selling pay-per-view fights?
I give the Paul brothers credit because at least they look like they're passionate about like trying to look the part. But when you see Lamar Odom in the ring and some of the other guys, and the fact that because of the paydays, they're continuing to do it, I think it's actually offensive to people that love the real sports in this, in like the sport of boxing.
Look, I love the sweet science, so it's not great, if I'm being honest. Like, credit to them getting the paydays. Credit for the Paul brothers being able to sell the fight. I can't wait till a Paul like fights an actual boxer that wants to beat him up, because it's not going to be pretty. Jason on Twitter just quote tweeted us saying that, look, the Astros tweeted about the game that's going on now. It shows like a Ledmus Diaz diving play into the hole, throws the runner out, that preserved a scoreless tie going into the eighth inning. They play at 3:05. I don't know which fake Astro blue mark check on Twitter you follow, but they play at 3:05. Trust the Killer Bees. Give us a chance to earn your trust. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Speaking of the Astros, they are doing something I've never seen, and I'm curious if Blankers has ever seen. We discuss next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. The Astros, who play at 3:05 today, are doing something that I've never seen before. I'm curious, Blankers.
Mm-hmm.
I just threw it out Altuve on purpose, I think. Anyways.
Wait, last night?
Jail. Oops, I let it slip.
Last night? Oops. I didn't see that last night.
Yeah, my bad. Anyways, the Astros are doing something I've never seen before. I'm curious if you've ever seen this as well. Luis Garcia, who pitched on June 22nd, is not going to pitch again until tomorrow. So that's 7 full days of rest. He's pitching like once more than – he's pitching one time a week. And the reason that he's been moved down until – Friday is because they wanted Justin Verlander to start today at 3:05 against the New York Mets. Why today? Because it's the fifth day of rest. We've heard that Justin Verlander wants to pitch every fifth day. On top of that, they moved Framber Valdez ahead of Luis Garcia as well. He pitched on the 23rd. Of course, he pitched incredibly well yesterday. So they went with Framber on 5 days rest. They're going Justin Verlander today at 3:05 on 5 days rest. And then they'll go Luis Garcia tomorrow. They bumped him back 2 days, 7 full days of rest for Luis Garcia. So what we're seeing with the Astros is basically a hybrid rotation where they're going to pitch Fromber and namely JV every fifth day, and then everybody else is just going to kind of fall in place, give them extra days here and there. It's a hybrid five-man right now. I think when Odorizzi comes back, we're looking at a hybrid six-man. Are you okay with the way the Astros are handling
this? Can I give you another thought process as to why they did what they did?
Sure.
On top of the fact that you're right, JV wants to pitch every fifth day. I think also because we're dealing with the Yankees in a one-game series.
I don't know about that.
I don't think they want to see Verlander a second time. Or I don't think the Astros want the Yankees to see Verlander a second time around because of the fact that, the more times you see a guy, the more you understand his pitches and his tendencies, and you get a better read on him. That's why we always say pitchers have the advantage over hitters when they first get to the big leagues because the hitters have never seen him before. I just think from the Yankees' perspective, it's just worth factoring in that the Astros thought, hey, I don't want them to see him too much. They won't see him till the postseason, depending on what they do with their rotation coming out of the All-Star break. But I think that the fact that he pitched really well and you saw him once is one thing. But from the other point of view, from the way you set it up, look, I don't mind JV wanting to pitch every 5 days. He's got a really weird, rubbery, elastic arm that for the most of his career, now after Tommy John surgery, looks like it's back to the same again. He can do whatever he wants. I would be real careful on Fromber because as good as Fromber was going, they kind of probably sat on it a little too long in terms of how many pitches he threw. But last night he didn't throw too many. It was a more relaxed situation for him. So it works in this scenario. I wouldn't keep pushing that narrative if he has a game or two where he goes over 100 pitches, because the same way we've heard them highlight over and over again, Luis Garcia has never thrown this many pitches in his whole career. We get that. But at a certain point, you also have to let him be him and ride him out to be whatever he can be without being too careful and having it stunt the potential growth of your team.
There's also like the rhythm that you like to talk about too, right? And you get into the rhythm and you're pitching either every fifth day, or if you have a six-man rotation, you're pitching every sixth day. I know the off days throw a wrinkle into that as well. But like, to me, it's very much clear that the Astros want Verlander to pitch every fifth day because Justin Verlander is telling the Astros that he wants to pitch every fifth day. And Fromber's one of your horses, too, at the top of the rotation. Like, he's your number two right now, right behind Justin Verlander. So you're going to prioritize those two. But where that hurts is that you have Luis Garcia, who's taking two additional days off. We've seen it with Christian Javier, where he gets bumped back. Now he's looking at an extra day or two off. We've seen it as well with Jose Urquidy. And now that you have a six-man rotation, we think, whenever Jake Odorizzi comes back onto this team, I think you're going to see the same hybrid six-man rotation where Fromber's going every fifth day, where JV's going every fifth day, and then everybody else is just going to kind of fall in line. So Luis Garcia might pitch once every eighth day. Odorizzi might pitch once every seventh day. Javier might pitch once every seventh day. Like, are you okay with this hybrid five-man and probably six-man coming up?
At this point, we're still basically in the middle point of the season. I'm fine with it. I think that at a certain point, you have to kind of fine-tune it so that you get your top four arms as the work that they need to be stretched out enough to be who you need them to be in the playoffs. But I think that, you know, we always say that it's a copycat league in all the different leagues and sports. I think that the Astros might be onto something that the Yankees are now going to with a six-man rotation. I think that if it works and you have the quality arms that the Astros have, and if your teams that have similar situations with at least decent arms, they may look to do the same thing too if the blueprint continues to be successful, and it might be something you see more times than not. I do think that as we get into August and later in August, you're going to have to stop doing the six-man rotation and get the four or five guys that you think are in the running to be your guys in the playoffs the work that they need so that they're stretched out enough to be who you need them to be.
I feel like it's something we've never seen before. Like,
I don't disagree.
Like, it's odd that you have, because I mean, sometimes you see a five man, sometimes you see a six man. Five man's usually been a lot more common over the last decade. Six man, I think, is becoming more popular recently, especially for teams who have like a lot of young arms. They're not playoff contenders. Things.
But can
like
I give
that.
You an example of why? Like when I say it's a copycat league, so we never saw any teams forever in a day do the shift. And then all of a sudden, when a team started doing the shift and it started working, and then other teams that were very highly analytical with some of their new front office people said, well, we should be doing that too. Then all of a sudden, everybody was doing the shift. And I think that six-man rotations could be something with 162 games, and we all hear it all the time, how long the schedule is and how many is it such a long with too many games. Well, this is a way that maybe that they can circumvent some of that and the wear and tear that a lot of pitchers take trying to get through 162 games with a five-man rotation.
Yeah, I mean, you look around the league and most teams use the five-man. There's some that use the six-man. Usually those are teams that are not in the in the playoff mix, per se, although there's more teams in the playoff mix now than usual because you have six playoff teams in the AL, six playoff teams in the NL as well. But the Astros, obviously they're going to prioritize Justin Verlander. He's going to pitch every fifth day, regardless of everybody else. If it means Luis Garcia is pitching on the eighth day, he's pitching on the eighth day, even if Justin Verlander is going on the fifth. 713-780-ESPN. Are you okay with that? 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Clarence, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Clarence?
Going on, boys. I don't know if I am okay with it. Like, it sounds nice, but at some point, the Astros probably need to think about saving JV from himself. Like, I know you want him to pitch every – I know he wants to pitch every 5 days and everything, but he has the highest innings pitch, and yes, he's doing well, but we have to remember he's still coming off with Tommy John. Now, how will he do today? I'll find out since I'm on the way home now to watch that 305
pitch. Thanks, Big C.
Big C knows what's up. Big C knows
can I
the Astros started 305.
Can I respond to that real quick? I think that the delicate balance you deal with JV that you don't have to worry about with the rest of your young pitchers is the fact that it's a very, very, very fine line right now because you want him to come back and you want him to be happy. And you know that, forget the Crane relationship, the fact that with he's going to get to the innings threshold. He could be a free agent, or you're gonna have to re-sign him for even more money. But you also don't want to piss him off in the process that he goes, look, I'm gonna go somewhere where they're gonna let me be me, and I'm gonna be able to pitch the way I want to pitch. And if you weren't willing to give me every fifth day like I wanted, I'll go somewhere where I can. And I think most teams would bend over backwards and go, if that's what it's gonna take, you can pitch every fifth day and whatever day you want to pitch in between. And so I think that's a different variable than you see with the rest of the guys in the staff.
That was probably part of it. I don't like whenever you were discussing with Justin Verlander in the offseason, he probably said something along the lines of, look, I want to pitch every fifth day. Like, I want to.
You think
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, he's letting it be known now.
But the reason why I asked that question, though, Jeremy, is because of the fact that I don't think even him coming off of the Tommy John surgery, as much as he had confidence in himself, right? As much as he believed that he was going to be the old Justin Verlander, I don't know that he could have been that boisterous and bold and demanding to come out and say, right from the jump, I'm going to need every fifth day. I think he might have been more likely to take the Astros scenario because of the fact that with all the pitchers they had, that they might be able to give him an extra day that a lot of teams don't have the luxury of being able to do.
Yeah, I mean, we can never be behind those walls, right, and know the conversation that's going. All we know that now is that Justin Verlander is making it very obvious that he wants to be pitching every fifth day. But I agree with Big C. Like, if I had my druthers and I could tell you how I wanted it to be, I want Justin Verlander being limited. Like, if Odorizzi comes back, I would like the six-man rotation. Or even right now, like, just have a normal five-man rotation. If you get a day off, you get a day off. Because the reason that you bring back Justin Verlander isn't so he can go win a Cy Young, so he can win 18 to 20 games, so he can have a 250 ERA. The big reason that you brought back Justin Verlander was to optimize your chances of winning a World Series. Well, so that he could put you in the best spot to win a World Series in October. If he throws 200 innings this season, does that accomplish that? I would say that it's hard to answer that. I'd much rather him pitch 160 than 190.
I'm with you, but I think that's why I'm saying when you started out the negotiations with Justin Verlander, I think that it was advantageous in his camp that you had the luxury of being able to go every 6 day and not rush back if you didn't have to. I think that once he realized a few starts in, hey, I'm going to be fine. And not only am I going to be fine, I may be just exactly who I was before I had Tommy John surgery. That's when he started the narrative of, hey, man, I want to pitch every fifth day. I want to get back to, because then again, now you're starting to factor in the way we know Justin Verlander thinks. He's a numbers guy. He's a history guy. He wants to be one of the best of all time guys. So because of all those things, he's starting to factor in the kind of career accomplishments he wants to achieve.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a factor too.
Yeah, if you look at it from a team perspective, I would love to limit the innings that Verlander's throwing, and maybe that could start today at 3:05. All right, coming up next, which of the two, because there's a couple of injuries for the Astros and maybe more coming soon, which of the two do you have more confidence in, Jake Odorizzi or Lance McCullers? Let's discuss. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So, should we talk about this? Jordan Alvarez and Jeremy Pena had a collision in shallow left field just moments
ago.
When's
the last time you got me speechless in the middle of a statement? I saw it happen. It just absolutely stopped everything.
Jeremy Pena ran into the freight train known as Jordan Alvarez. A big collision. Pena looked like he took a brunt of it, but Jordan took longer to get up. They ended up carting off Jordan, but he was up on his feet, walked to the cart. Pena just limped into the dugout. Astros play at 3:05 today. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Hopefully they're all right. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Brian, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Brian?
What's going on, guys? Hey, man, I usually don't like doing hypotheticals, but I wanna get y'all's opinion on this. So Odorizzi's he's slated to come back here soon. You're expecting McCullers, you know, by the playoffs. So let's say you've got your entire starting rotation ready for the playoffs, and all of these guys are humming. You got your seven deep starters. I mean, it's a given. They're going to push Javier back, you know, to the bullpen, which I think Javier is a future starter. That guy's a starter in my book.
All right, what's the question?
Go ahead.
What's the question?
Well, give me. So, say we're starting playoffs right now.
We lost you. I think his question was going to be what's your playoff rotation? I think that's what the question was going to be from Brian. And if they're all humming, right? Because like. We're going to talk here in a second about which of the two do you trust more that's currently hurt, Odorizzi or McCullers. But let's play it to Brian's hypothetical for a second. You have everybody on this rotation that's pitching well. Verlander's looking like a Cy Young. Fromber's looking like a potential ace. Javier striking out 13 New York Yankees in the Bronx in a combined no-hitter. Jose Urquidy's been pitching, Urquidy's been pitching incredible since he ditched the cutter. Odorizzi, when he comes back, Lance McCullers, if he's humming when he comes back, who's the other one that I just missed there? I missed it. Oh, Luis Garcia.
Yep.
All of them are humming. What's your playoff rotation with the four, and how do you map out the pitching
Look,
rotation?
I'm
too?
Sorry. Jake Odorizzi was a pitcher that pitched for the Twins against the Astros in the playoffs at one point in time in his career. I just don't think that Jake Odorizzi, no matter where he was in his career or could be in his career, on the downside of it, is better than Lance McCullers if Lance McCullers is 100%. It's a huge if, and it's obviously a big hypothetical. But if I have my choice and my druthers and everybody is 100% healthy, there's no way Lance McCullers isn't one of my four best pitchers.
Yep.
And so if you know what Fromber is, and Fromber ERA-wise and just simply numbers-wise is right there neck and neck with JV. So you got JV, you got Fromber, you got Lance, and the way Javier's been pitching lately, I don't think anybody's better than him. And you got a great problem to have, but I think those are my four.
If you're looking at the absolute best, you can't not have JV. You can't not have Fromber. You can't not have Lance McCullers. Because
right.
At their very best, I think they'll all have ace potential. So, I mean, Verlander won an MVP and has won a couple of Cy Youngs. So Lance McCullers would be in that conversation, Fromber being the conversation. It'd be very difficult for the number four. But after seeing what Christian Javier did to the Yankees, where he went seven no-hit innings in hostile ground, struck out 13 against one of the very best offenses in all of baseball, and also I like the mentality, right? Like, Luis Garcia at times looks a little bit nervous. Odorizzi, you know the bottom side of it as well. Urquidy, like, I don't think he has the stuff like Christian Javier does.
I was going to say, the top three you're talking about has a strikeout pitch.
It's the argument for the fourth.
Right?
Because I think the top three are unanimous if everybody's rolling, which is a huge if, and we'll get to that in just a second. To me, it's an argument over four. But I think Javier's high end, and he just showed us this over the weekend, is higher than Luis García. It's higher than Urquidy. It's higher than Odorizzi. So I would lean that way. But I also don't rule out the possibility that we're looking at a stacking situation, like we saw with McCullers and Morton in 2017. Like, could you imagine Javier for four, Luis García for three or four? Like, all of a sudden...
Right, it was an Odorizzi-Javier situation we've seen recently. Oh, however, you just take Jake out of the equation and take your two best pitchers to stack to do it that way, and I get that. It's just the only guy that's going to have a problem with it is Odorizzi, just simply because of the fact that he's already said he's had an issue coming out of the pen.
I don't care.
Everybody else.
I don't care about ticking off Odorizzi.
No, I don't. You can't.
If you tick off Odorizzi, then I'm not worried about that.
But the other guys you have have pitched out of the pen before, too. So no matter who you put there, they've had limited experience to some degree. But Garcia's come out of the bullpen before. Urquidy's come out of a pen before.
See, I don't remember Garcia out of the pen, like outside of the playoffs.
I believe that he had for a short stint.
I had a conversation with my buddies about Luis García out of the bullpen yesterday,
uh-huh.
and how much you trust Luis García out of the bullpen. Because he's been way more of a starter than I always say
is prep time. How long does it take you to get warm, loose, and ready?
Yeah.
And can you adjust to that to be ready quicker or do things to prep so that when you are called on? And the other thing is, how quickly can you bounce back?
I think he can be nasty out of the bullpen. Like, a lot of that's guessing because we haven't seen him do it a lot, but... If you have Luis García that's just emptying the tank for one inning, because he's not a very long stamina endurance guy. Like, he goes five, maybe six innings. Like, Urquidy goes longer than Luis García. You get García emptying the tank for one inning, I think we're looking at a pitcher's like bumping 98, 99 with like nasty secondary stuff, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, look at it. The other thing, the thing I was talking about was, who has the strikeout pitch? Who has the ability, like a runner on third base in less than two outs, to get a guy out with strikeouts?
Are you talking about out of the pen?
Yeah, I'm talking about of the rotation.
Or just period.
The only two guys that I don't think that I would have confidence in being able to get a guy out with a strikeout would be Urquidy and Odorizzi.
Same.
So that narrows it down for me already. And then from there, then I start looking at other intangibles in terms of, you know.
The problem with that, though, is like, not that there's a problem, but usually, like, if one guy's not as much of a strikeout pitcher as the other, like, usually you want that more in a starting spot than out of the bullpen, right? Because the bullpen, come in a high leverage spot, runner at second, two outs, give me a punch out. Like, you know what I mean?
From a relief pitcher, you mean, instead of a starter?
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah, and I get that. But I also think that because it's the playoffs and there's so many high, everything seems to be a high leverage situation, that you could factor it in either way. I'm just saying, because if all things are close to the same, and we already said we both agree on our top three, I think the other thing that factors into me is all the different guys, from ex-major league hitters to people that know the game, to people that are still in the game, talking about when Javier is right with his stuff and his ability to change speeds and where his arm angle is, and all those different things, he's virtually unhittable when he's on his game. I don't think we say those same kind of things about the other guy.
His upside's too good for me. He needs to be part of that rotation. All right, Lance McCullers, Jake Odorizzi, both of them, of course, on the injured list. Odorizzi making a two-start rehab assignment. When's his second start, by the way?
I think it might be tonight.
Okay, so he's going to come back at some point. So second start tonight in Sugar Land. They'll probably give him the 4 or 5 days off before they recall him to the team. So it's looking next week that he's going to be back on the big club, back on the roster, the 26-man. So he's coming back. Lance McCullers, we'll see. But which of the two do you have more confidence in? Like, Odorizzi's like on the path to recovery. It looks like he's going to be A-OK and healthy, but not quite as good of a pitcher as Lance McCullers is. Whereas Lance McCullers, you have somebody who top end would be part of your big three in the starting rotation, but has the injury concern. So which of the two do you have more confidence in?
I think that it's easy, hands down, for me, assuming that Lance McCullers would be healthy.
But you can't assume that. You can't assume that with this question.
I still would have more confidence in Lance McCullers because of his stuff. Because if he's using all of his stuff, if we're not limiting his curveballs, if we're not to the point where we assume.
But we can't assume anything.
That's too many details that I don't have. If I know that he's just going to pitch fastball, changeup, and an occasional, you know, slider.
He threw, what, two sliders the other day?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that factors into this equation. Like, we know, like, we do
have
that information.
I also know that Mr. Craft the Bed and ready to be DFA'd was pretty damn bad until Dido came into the mix and we found, and he resurrected his career. So I don't have, like, overwhelming confidence either way if I don't know which Lance I'm getting.
That's a good way to answer it. I think that it's difficult to have confidence in either one. I really do, and I think that's what makes it a challenging question and a good question. And I lean McCullers, to be honest with you. And, like, I get the injury concerns. I get just a couple of breaking balls, throwing the rehab. I get that he might not even pitch in 2022. But I don't believe Jake Odorizzi adds, like, there's not more value to this pitching staff with Odorizzi on it. Like, he's a surplus. It's great to have Odorizzi pitching to a 3.5 ERA, and that's fantastic. We've defended him at times, not always.
And he's a veteran, and he's with experience and all those kind of things.
Second year coming off Tommy John, better than your first year coming off Tommy John. But does he rise this team up? Like, is he upgrading Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia in the rotation? Like, it's a surplus. It's great to have the depth of Jake Odorizzi, but he's not really elevating a playoff rotation, whereas Lance McCullers, obviously, there's tons of risk with the injury concerns. Obviously, there is the unknown if he can pitch in 2022. He's trying to get back there, but he elevates the playoff rotation if he does. So I'll take the Lance McCullers on which of the two I would have more confidence in.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that, but like I said, I'm not counting on him to come back at all. But at a certain point, and this is such a difficult decision for James Click and the management of the Astros, the fact that you're sitting here and you're evaluating a guy that you realize you're paying for his future as well as his value for this season, but you owe it to this team to go for it in every possible way if you have a chance to win a World Series. So at a certain point, you've babied him all this time from the middle of the playoffs last year until right now. And currently, there has nothing been done medically to make him better and alleviate the problem. At a certain point, you just throw him out there and say, go do what you do. And if you break down, then we're going to finally take care of this medically. Or do you say, because you got him signed for so many years after this, we're not willing to take that risk. But you run the risk of pissing off your entire locker room, which has a chance to win a World Series.
I think that that's a question that the Astros are going to have to answer.
It's a tough question.
I think it's a question they're going to have to answer, and I would not be surprised. I would not be shocked if the Astros go the route of being safe with Lance McCullers. So I think, you know, we talk about the Astros playing at 3:05, which they start at 3:05. No collision, no shutout, both ways, whatever. We just fooled the ESPN 97.5 Twitter account. They just DM'd me. I don't know who sent this. Yordan and Pena have exited the game after a scary collision. We've been trolling people. We've been fooling people all day. We just fooled our colleagues and employees as ESPN 97.5 Twitter
Power account the hive.
DMing me that the game's going on now. It's not. 3:05. All right, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Which of the two do you have more confidence in? Is it McCullers? Is it Odorizzi? And is David Culley still the coach if he didn't push back on who the coordinator should be? And is that okay? Skiller Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jake Asman is joining us. You can listen to him each and every day. The Will House, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 3-7. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you doing?
So PGA Tour hat, not Live Tour, huh? You're picking sides.
I mean... Yeah, I am.
I'm a Houston-based T-shirt or shirt. You had a run going here.
That was last week.
You still had some this week, didn't you?
Houston sports-wise,
I thought you had some Houston shirts this week.
I had a NASA shirt on the other day.
Well, that's Houston.
But I was doing Houston sports.
Oh, okay.
You know, we had the Arrows, the Roughnecks. We had the Houston Open. We had a Rocket shirt. We had a Cougar shirt. Like, each day, I went all out for Houston sports.
Yeah. So that was more than a week.
Well, it was 5 days.
I thought you just named more than five.
Is Jake the only adult you know who does Spirit Week?
Yes. I think probably not.
Well, hey, Cody does Spirit Day, but not week. He does the Friday Hawaiians.
Yeah. Not this week. He gone.
He's not here on Friday?
No, Cody's no longer with us.
What?
He's no longer with us.
For the rest of the week?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, just you and BK?
Just BK and I.
Oh, yep. I'll listen.
Wow. I get it.
You texted me, I think it was yesterday, right? I was out at dinner. A lot of Gentle Ben. But you said something about Brendan that we needed to take Brendan to task about something?
Yeah, we discussed it at the end of our show.
Oh, you did.
Brendan had a tweet about Kyrie Irving that, I mean, I just thought it was ridiculous. Hmm. But it was funny. And I figured you guys would also discuss it on your
show. Let's hear it.
So I'll read the tweet. It was in reference to Kyrie Irving taking the player option with the Nets and then saying the quote, normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
I've made my decision to opt in. See you in the fall. Mm-hmm. So then Brandon quote tweets that, and he says, I knew somebody who thought like Kyrie in high school. That person works at a gourmet cheese shop for a living now. Yes, I'm saying Kyrie should work at a gourmet cheese shop. So he tweets that. Then he follows up and says, I'm not shaming the guy from high school for the record. Ran into him a few months ago when I was home, and when he told me what he was doing, I actually felt like it made all the sense in the world for the guy I knew back then. And it's just such a spectacular tweet. I don't even know where to begin.
Was it Antonelli from Antonelli's Cheese Shop on the commercial? No?
I mean, are you cheese shaming people,
no,
Brendan?
No, or? Honestly.
Well, dessert shaming was not of the question.
I meant sincerely. When I found that out, the guy wasn't like – out of this world thinker is the way I would describe him. It didn't seem like his thought process belonged on this planet. And when I talked to him about what he was doing now, he like genuinely enjoyed it. He loved selling people fancy cheese and helping them pick the right one. And
does
I was like,
cut it himself?
Well, probably.
Okay.
But I was like, this is Kyrie Irving. It's where he belongs. I think he'd be much happier there than in the NBA.
This conversation's like Swiss cheese, a lot of holes in it.
Yeah, and I don't think that guys running cheese shops are making what Kyrie Irving's making.
Well, no. I mean, maybe this is an after his career kind of thing.
It was just such a random tweet. I was like, yeah, everyone's having their take on Kyrie on Twitter, and I go on there and I see Brendan's comparing Kyrie Irving to a gourmet cheese worker.
I ran into this guy a couple years ago, or a couple months ago. Wasn't long ago. And when I found out, it was just like, oh, wow. I've definitely thought before that he
What's his
behaves.
First name?
Dan.
Dan. You think Dan has, like, the Munster 7, like the Kyrie 7s, like seven generations of shoes and shoe deals that are paying the same way? He's got the Cheddar 7 and cheese named after him that's making the same kind of cash?
The one thing I will agree with Brendan is that Kyrie does not want to play basketball. Like, that's the thing. Like, he wants to be doing everything but play basketball.
Like I've heard cheese. So much about, and I don't know what you've heard, but from the standpoint of just the fact that he has – He just refuses to have anyone tell him what to do in that organization. And they've over-empowered a guy that's not even the best player on the team.
No.
And he is a hell of a player.
When he plays, never plays.
Right, but at the same time, now he has to go prove it. But he's going to prove it at $36-plus million to prove that he's worthy of a 4 or 5 year deal at $46-plus million. And then who's to say that after proving it for a year, he doesn't go right back to doing the flighty, ridiculously stupid things that he already was doing.
The quote that he gave, though, was the most tone-deaf quote I think I've ever seen. You're daring to be different by opting in for $37 million instead of $6 million that the Lakers could have offered you. It's just such an asinine quote, but it's very on brand for Kyrie Irving.
I think he likes to be the most interesting guy in the room and loves the attention. But
I think he is, yeah.
I care more about have y'all ever been in a gourmet cheese shop than what y'all think of Kyrie
I have
Irving.
Never been in a gourmet. And I'm from Wisconsin, by the way, and I've never been in a gourmet cheese shop.
You ever
shop.
Been in a gourmet cheese shop?
I have not, but I would be interested in maybe going with Brendan, though, specifically to this
what
cheese shop.
What if there was no alcohol?
Brendan, you ever been to a gourmet cheese shop?
I don't know that I was aware they existed.
Then how do you know it's on brand? I like a good charcuterie board. So, like, I appreciate some good cheese from time to time.
Is that a game or is that...
It's the board with the meats and, like, the cheeses and the bread. The
jacuzzi board's like Monopoly.
Yeah, exactly. Or like backgammon. Yeah. Are we playing jacuzzi tonight?
No, you have it with some good wine out in the hill country. I love a good jacuzzi board from time to time.
Jacuzzi.
Jacuzzi. Okay. Right. What's your beef with jacuzzi?
Do you know how to spell
I don't think there's
jacuzzi.
Beef on there, is there?
There is, yeah. They put some, like, smoked sausage on there or some, okay. Like, summer sausage.
Salami?
I mean. Yeah, some salami, okay. Some bologna.
I don't know how to spell it.
Maybe not bologna. Maybe not bologna. Anyways, yeah, I like a good jacuzzi board. I'm surprised you're not a jacuzzi guy.
Nope.
I figured you would be all over the charcuterie.
Nope.
That's interesting. All right, so which of these two, Jake, do you have more confidence in? For what we know now, Jake Odorizzi or Lance McCullers?
If Lance pitches,
nope.
Lance.
No ifs.
See, I wasn't allowed to do this either.
No ifs. Everybody wants to move the question. Who do you have more confidence in, Odorizzi or McCullers?
No ifs, buts, candies, nuts, or charcuterie board.
Odorizzi, because he's actually coming back. We have no idea about Lance.
So... That's fair. I think that a lot of people would answer that way. Blankers didn't answer at all. He said neither one. He said I have no confidence in either one
of
these
two.
But I said
if I had to pick one, I took Lance.
See, I go Lance too. Now, the injury part, absolutely valid. Because, you know, I mean, Lance McCullers, I think, is still an unknown if he pitches this year. I think he's trying to. He's efforting to. I don't know if it's a guarantee.
But the other monkey wrench you threw at me was, even if he's not hurt, I can't find out if he's able to throw curveballs or not.
Of course you can't know that. He's not throwing them yet.
But he's not hurt. They just might recommend that he doesn't throw any curveballs. Well, that still affects his effectiveness.
But that also affects the question.
No.
Like, which of the two do you have more confidence in based on what
board.
You know now? So why I went McCullers and not Odorizzi, It's obviously not because of the injury concern. Odorizzi is going to pitch tonight and make his second rehab assignment, and he's going to come back, and he'll be on the big league roster, I imagine, sometime next week. I just don't think that he elevates your playoff rotation, right? Like, you know the Astros are going to be a playoff team. They lead the division by a mile. You're looking at JV, Fromber, who knows after that. I think it's a competition with Christian Javier and then Luis Garcia or Keedy. Odorizzi could be in that mix. But I don't think Odorizzi elevates that rotation. He doesn't make that rotation better. So while you give away some health concerns with Lance McCullers, you also gain the possibility that he could elevate that pitching staff once you get to the postseason.
Yeah, I like that argument. I just, thanks. Until I know Lance is healthy, it's just tough to pick him. Look, who's better? It's clearly Lance. Who do I trust right. more in a playoff game? It's clearly Lance. But is he pitching?
I think you just changed your answer there.
My answer is still Odorizzi, but I can understand the argument for Lance, but the safer thing to say is the guy that's definitely pitching.
I think it's a very close question. I think it's going to be, you know, 6-1 way, half a dozen the other, because Odorizzi is going to be back next week.
Yeah.
Lance McCullers, will he be back in 2022? I think it's the
you already know that I've written him off.
Over this
it would be a huge luxury if he shows that he's capable of not only coming back but with his repertoire and stay healthy. But I'm not going to count on a guy that I can't count on that hasn't done anything medically to fix what I couldn't count on him for in the playoffs.
Agreed.
Yeah. No, so yeah, so fair take, Jake. I think with a fair take here, going with Odorizzi on it. Now let me switch this around to the Outkick 360 that we heard David Culley on yesterday, which you guys had some fun with. Is Culley still the head coach of the Houston Texans if he didn't push back on the coordinators of this team, namely Tim Kelly?
I don't think so. I think that's maybe what they told him. I think the plan was to get rid of him because he showed that he was not qualified to be a coach in that 1 year.
It's true.
Not his fault.
Still it's still a bad look for Caserio then.
100%. I mean, look, I'm very, you know, pro Caserio overall, I'd say, but I mean, let's not ignore the fact his first big hire was David Culley, and then he nearly hired Josh McCown and then ended up with Lovie Smith.
I think the biggest thing we can tell from Caserio is that he just really doesn't care about the head coach. Like, he doesn't put a whole lot of importance on that position.
I think that's because he's at a point with his roster right now that he doesn't have to.
I think that that's fair. I think that's part of the equation. I also think part of the equation is that he looks at the head coach a lot differently than he looks that other teams look at head coach. One, he's talked about a baseball model. So he I think, envisions himself as the figurehead of this organization, which I don't even know if that's the wrong thing. But then the second part of that, to your point, where the roster's not very good yet, I think he's looking for a developer as his head coach, not like a great game day manager, when to go for it in the fourth quarter, because this team's not there yet. I think he's looking more for like a raw, let's get the most out of the young players that we possibly can. He hoped that David Culley was going to be that. He wasn't, and now he's looking at Lovie Smith as somebody that can be that kind of guy.
He's in trouble, though, if Lovie's not the guy, because I don't know if you get a chance to hire a third head coach. And Lovie's definitely getting at least 2 years.
You should be that way. I'm not sure Cal views it that way.
I also like I think that he really liked the fact that he thought he was getting a guy that he can manipulate and be Geppetto, and just Culley was going to be the puppet. But then Culley decided at a certain point to not be the good soldier, no matter what contract he had or how many aspirations of how many years he had to work. And that kind of screwed the whole thing up, because I think that Caserio at a certain point realizes he has to hire a real coach. But in the short term, he liked the thought of being able to be on the headsets and be at practice and interrupt whenever he felt like it. And that was just blown out of the water with Lovie.
So we had 7 calls today telling us that the Astros were playing, even though that it started at 3:05. We had dozens of tweets. We had hundreds of texts telling us that the Astros actually were going on during our show and that they didn't play at 3:05. We were under the assumption that they were playing at 3:05. We just now looked it up. Apparently they were playing.
What?
They were playing earlier today.
In a world where the Astros actually played when you said they weren't.
And they won. They beat the Mets 2-0. Justin Verlander, outstanding. Jason Castro, the 2-run homer in the
guess
top
who's
of the
not
ninth.
Getting DFA'd tonight.
And Ryan Pressly did not bring out the alter ego of Ryan Stressly. A 1-2-3 ninth inning. Not so bad. Astros 6-2 in the Gotham Gauntlet. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
Astros postgame show.
You're going to call it the 11th inning show?
I don't know if we're allowed to do that, but if you want Astros
well, it's not
talk,
the 10th, you're in the 11th.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Yes, Astros 11th inning show coming up right here on the station.
First pitch was 12-11 today, not 3:05. The more you know. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. The Wheelhouse coming up next. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.